I have had more sex with my husband in like the 2 weeks following that session than we've had in the last 6 months because we talked about it.
Right. And I shared my primary need, which is I need you to do the dishes.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. So if I asked you what brings pleasure to your life, how would you answer that question? Would you have a series of answers ready to go? Would you look at me with a blank stare? Would you go, ugh, that isn't going to happen till I retire and the kids leave the house? No matter where you are at on this spectrum, my guest today is speaking to you. Dr. Jordan Wiggins is a naturopathic doctor, a very dear colleague, and someone who is immensely passionate about bringing pleasure back into the lives of women. Now, while she loves to talk about pleasure in the context of sexual pleasure and gratification and all of those things, we both discussed in today's episode that we are not going to be able to achieve those things until the fundamentals of pleasure are in place in our life. Sometimes that means a glass of wine. Other times it means someone is going to do the dishes. But in either case, if having a different type of year is what you want to have in store for 2020, I guarantee listening to the wisdom of Dr. Jordan Wiggins is going to make all the difference. It is truly my pleasure to introduce you to her and have her on the Entrepology Podcast here today.
Dr. Jordan Wiggins, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Hi, Megan. So happy to be here.
So we have a lot of really great stuff to start to unpack. We are talking not just like women's health. We are going to talk about the passionate side of women's health, the side that we really have an opportunity to speak openly about. And before we do that, I would love for you to give everyone a little bit of a background in terms of who you are and why this is a subject area that you are so passionate about.
So my main focus, my main purpose in life is that the lack of pleasure is a health problem that we have to fix, especially for women. The women that I work with, both in my clinic in Niagara, Ontario, Health Overall, as well as with the online coaching program, the Pleasure Collective, that is our mission, to change the way that we talk about, educate, and deliver sexual health and wellness for women.
So why is there, like, I'm just going to ask this straight out because I've been in practice for 12 years. I talk to women about this stuff all the time. Like, why is there such a lack of pleasure? What I frequently hear from people is, oh, I don't have any libido. But what I never hear from people is, oh my gosh, I wish I had way more pleasure. I wish my libido was way higher. It was like an obligation or like the to-do list item their husband asked them to ask their doctor about. It doesn't even feature on the radar of women. Like, what the heck's going on?
That's actually an amazing question and a really good point to start, because it's a part of the problem, because people don't even understand what the problem is. They think that they just want to have sex maybe once or twice a week or whatever would satisfy their partner. But really, if we take it deeper, it's not just more sex or sex to keep the partner happy. It's to actually desire sex and enjoy the sex you're having, because that makes you want to have more intimacy. But it's not discussed. And even when you look at magazines, when you're checking out at the grocery store, it's about like increasing number of orgasms or the amount of times you have sex, but it's never that deeper discussion. And when we really get into it with my patients, it really is about the lack of pleasure, but it's just not even a conversation we're having.
Where do we start with that? with that piece? Because I think for a lot of women, they're like, if I could pick between having sex or going to sleep, I just actually want to sleep. Like, I'm just tired. Yeah. Like, we get so tired. Men don't seem to get as tired as we get. I don't know what the deal is there. But what is that? Is that a lack of libido? Is that where we are at in life? And we had some kids and we had career and we had these other things. Is it like, what's going on for people? Is this a hormone issue? Where do you start with people when that's the scenario? Because I feel like that's the scenario of everybody listening here today.
Oh, completely. And the thousands of women at our clinic, it's so common. 50% of women experience sexual dysfunction at some point in their life. So this is a massive problem. And if this was affecting that many men, I really think that there would be like national holidays, billions of research dollars funding towards trying to figure it out. But it's something like 7% of men. So it's really disproportionately women are affected. And honestly, I think it starts with the way we are educated about sex when we're kids, because we're taught reproduction. If we were even lucky enough, I know my teacher skipped that module in sex ed. So thank goodness I had parents that would have the conversation. But we're basically taught penis in vagina makes a baby. And by default, penetrative sex is more pleasurable for men and not as pleasurable for women. So a big thing that I see underlying is that women are not enjoying the sex they're having. Because if I see women that are the opposite, that the other side that have great libidos and they're always desiring it, first of all, they have, you know, balanced hormones and all of those other factors. But really, it's a mindset that they enjoy and want the sex they're having. So if there's a complete lack of desire, we really need to dive in and look at, are you happy with the way you're sexual with yourself? Are you happy with the way you're sexual with your partner? Or is it just the last thing on the to-do list before you go to sleep to keep your partner happy?
Right. Yeah. And I feel like that is the story for so many people. So what do you wish you could teach? Like, if you could go back and just like write that curriculum, like what is the core, it wouldn't necessarily happen in school, but what is like the core messaging you wish that every like 18-year-old woman received when it came to understanding sex and understanding pleasure?
This is one of my goals, to do a curriculum for sex education that's actually going to solve this problem, which would include pleasure, beliefs about pleasure, consent, figuring out what you actually want, what feels good for you. We're using male as default model, and also pornography comes up a lot, especially for younger generations, right? If we're using porn as our default education, then that's like, I cannot remember who said this, but that's like using the Fast and the Furious movies for learning how to drive. It's not sex education. So by learning to have a solid yes, like these are the things I like, these are the things that turn me on, and a definite no, those boundaries and that awareness, and these things can evolve over time, and they should evolve over time with exploration. And that's something I find a lot of people are missing the mark on, is they're just in this rut or this routine. And for a lot of the women that I work with, they're even performing or doing things that they think feel good or look good for their partners, and not what actually feels good in their bodies. And then they don't want sex. And of course they don't.
Well, I feel like hormones are smart that way. When you find a path that actually is pleasurable for yourself, it reinforces things in a positive way. It maintains that libido. When you get caught, and it's not the only reason why we have hormonal dysfunction around or lack of balance around desire as women, but there definitely is a perpetuation when you're on the right track, your hormones are like, this is really great. I'm going to feed you more of this. I'm going to amplify that desire. Like it really is self-fulfilling from that perspective.
Exactly. And that goes to the myth that sex is a drive. Sex is not a drive. It's not like hunger, where if you do not eat, you would, you know, starve essentially. With sex, the less sex you have, the less sex you actually want to have. So people think that it works the opposite way. And when you're having sex and beyond that, having pleasurable sex, you automatically want more, and your hormones, the like dopamine, the oxytocin, the extra like estrogen balancing of like sex hormones as well, that all happens favorably and to make you want more.
So how do you differentiate that clinically for people, whether we actually just have a hormonal imbalance for a variety of different reasons, or whether, like, where do you start really is what I'm asking.
So I start with a questionnaire for my patients and like a little 30-minute chat that we have. And we're basically going through what's going on. Can you orgasm? Is your hair falling out? Are you gaining weight? Do you have vaginal dryness? Is sex painful? Do you think about sex out of the blue? Would you be happy to never have sex again? Would you rather be on Instagram than have sex? So I go through the what's more like cellular physiologic questions and what is more mindset. And usually it's quite clear which way we need to go to solve the problem. Because if sex is painful, if women cannot orgasm at all, vaginal dryness, there and other things, weight gain, all that, it's likely that there is a hormonal component, and I will always test and do blood work to either rule that in or rule that out. And interestingly enough, more times than not, hormones are okay. And the overwhelming majority of the time, it's the desire piece, the lack of pleasure piece, that where we really need to start to work on it.
And where do you start with that piece?
Re-educating about what pleasure is. And I'll often this, and this is common, I'm sure you see it in your practice as well, anhedonia, or the lack of pleasure, lack of joy in life, just sort of feeling dull, like something's missing, the things that used to make you happy don't make you happy anymore. It's one of the diagnostic criteria of major depressive disorder. But I find the overwhelming majority of the women that I work with have anhedonia. They don't necessarily have depression. They don't fit all of the criteria, but they're lacking joy and the ability to take pleasure. And usually they're doing for everyone else.
Right.
At work, the kids, you know, and they're absolutely last on the list. So we start with, what is pleasure for you? Or I will ask the question in the first appointment, what do you do for yourself daily that brings you joy? And I get two responses, blank stare or tears.
They say that you are the product of the five people with whom you spend the most time. Imagine you could spend time with hundreds of fellow entrepreneurs and go-getters looking to uplevel their business, body, and mindset. The Entrepology Collective does not belong to us. It belongs to you. Come hang out with us on Facebook and let us collectively inspire, support, and cheerlead you towards your vision for contribution, your commitment towards better health, and your journey of mindset mastery. We are in this together. We are entrepreneurs by birth, by choice, and by mission. We are the Entrepology Collective. Search for us on Facebook and come join your tribe.
And to be clear, when we're talking about pleasure, I feel like for women who are tired, I'm going to throw myself in that category of three children. I'm tired. Like sex is one thing and pleasure derived from sex is one thing. But I do feel like that is like, that's on one end of a spectrum of what pleasure can be. Like when you're talking about pleasure, are you referencing pleasure on a continuum here? Or are you talking about sexual pleasure, the gratification from sexual pleasure? Just so we're clear where everybody's at.
Yeah, that's a great point. And thank you for backing that up. It is a continuum. And it's about, so for example, I was having this conversation yesterday with a patient. She absolutely hates her commute to work. Right. Drives her nuts.
Right.
So Sunday night, she's getting that pit in her stomach about the week to come and needing to commute. So how can we make that more fun, more desirable for her? Can she make a tea to take with her? Can she listen to a podcast that she likes? So we're talking about pleasure in literally every aspect of life. For me, something simple is I need fresh flowers, specifically orchids, in pretty much every room because I love them and right. They make me happy.
Yeah.
So it does not necessarily need to be about sex and orgasm and, you know, the things that sort of make people, you know, I feel like if we say pleasure, for some people, they think it's a dirty word or a bad concept, but I'm even talking about, you know, painting your nails, if that makes you happy, just finding ways in even better communication with your partner, with right. your kids. It's like whatever is going to make your day more joyous, more fulfilling, where you feel like your light is turning on as opposed to off, that's pleasure.
Right. And I feel like there's a threshold. So I will be really honest. Like I'm actually not even remotely interested in like the idea of even exploring sexual pleasure. If I fought with my kids that morning, if my house is a mess, if my children won't eat the dinner that I made for them, if I have 85 emails that I know I have to do at the end of the day, like when there's chaos everywhere else, the idea of then having this like pocket of pleasure somewhere else, it truly does feel like one more thing. And part of, you know, with the conversation I have with patients, and you certainly have this so much more, is really dissecting all of those other elements of their life, just like you were talking about, and making sure that those are like 7 out of 10s first, because otherwise it's just clutter. And it's so hard to enjoy a glass of wine amongst the clutter, let alone being in the mood to derive sexual pleasure from your partner. Like life is just so much more chaotic. It's not the same as when you were 24 years old and the only thing you had to worry about was an exam that week. So, you know, part of it is, I think for at least I'm going to actually just speak for myself, being able to access pleasure and fun and pure joy and all of those things, it does require that there's some calm to the chaos in order to be able to access that whole element of my life. And that didn't exist when I was 25 years old. And that's independent of libido. That's just a function of how many things are involved in being at this stage of living.
Exactly. And you actually hit on two of the modules that we work through with women. One is banishing the overwhelm, because like you said, if the inbox is full, the kitchen's a mess, you are fighting with the kids, who's turned on in that situation? And it's
not
so
me.
me either. And I think, yeah, majority of the women that I work with would agree that that's just, it doesn't happen because your cortisol is spiked and you're not in the parasympathetic state to receive at that point. So we're looking at scheduling. And, you know, where are you overwhelmed? I always start by asking people before we sort of dive into this module, what's hard? What are you tolerating? Who's saying no? And what can I do to help?
Right.
And when we're looking, I get them to fill out a calendar and then we're looking at it and shifts need to happen. I think and again, this is maybe a generalization, but for the majority of women that I'm working with, we're great tolerators. Mm-hmm. We can get it done. You know, we get it done by the deadline. It doesn't matter how much of ourselves we had to give, but with kids, work, whatever, it gets done. But it was difficult. It was not enjoyable. And of course, you're not in the headspace or the hormone space to want sex at that point. And then we have to work on communication. Because this has been a process for the last 10 years. And it started with me losing my libido and my desire for sex twice, which we can talk about later. But they, both times with me having to get it back and learning different facets. And this is why this is a multifactorial problem. This is why it's affecting 50% of women, because there is no little pink pill that just...
I think it affects 90% of women.
You're right. I definitely think, like, research-wise, it's 50, but it's underreported. And we also know that because people would, like, 80% of people would rather Google their problem than actually talk to their healthcare provider or friends about it. So it's definitely something, a conversation that we're not even having. So 50% is probably underreported. You're right. It's probably about 90 and 99% of the women that I work with.
Yeah. And I don't even think it's like it's not even a dysfunction. It's that we've never talked about it. It's like, I think 90% of people probably have crummy bowel movements because no one's ever told them what it should be, what it should or could be like. And when we get together as a group of girlfriends, we're not like, what are you doing to optimize pleasure and sexual gratification in your life? Or like, can I please just complain about my husband for 10 minutes? Or are your kids having this challenge at school? Are you like, there's so many other moving parts. And then it reinforces the chaos of this phase of life. I would so much rather sit around and enable people to have a conversation where they go, how are you decreasing the noise in your life so that you're able to even access, talk about, explore this idea of pleasure? I don't want to listen to anyone complain anymore. I want to listen to the things that are working so that you're able to access that place. And I suspect 90% of women are in that, they're in that boat. They're just so busy and they're so full of strategies to be able to decrease the noise.
Exactly. And I feel like it's almost taboo, or it's, you're not doing your job as a wife or partner if you're not satisfying your husband. Because I think oftentimes we tend to blame ourselves as being wrong, when really it's, you know, how we were educated and the way we're going about day to day. So the conversations need to be had. And it's amazing what just a conversation will do for libido. Once a month at my clinic, we have She Talks, and there's different topics, but like pleasure, desire, communication, boundaries, all these things that we need to decrease the noise, and like tips on how to do it. And most times it always comes back to pleasure. And women will email me after, this is just like an hour and a half talk. You know, we sit around in a circle, have some sparkling wine and snacks, and we actually talk about these issues. And I will get emails and Instagram DMs of women saying, I have had more sex with my husband in like the 2 weeks following that session than we've had in the last 6 months. Because we talked about it.
Right. And I shared my primary need, which is I need you to do the dishes.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's I know this is something that a lot of people talk about, but it's a really easy thing, easy place to start. The 5 love language quiz. Mm-hmm. Easy for people to Google. It's free. You do it. Your partner does it. And you can compare results. So sometimes something even as simple as taking a free online quiz that starts the conversation of, hey, honey, acts of service is a really big one for me. So if you did the dishes, did the laundry so that I had 30 minutes to relax in bed and read a book that I wanted to read or watch a Netflix show that I wanted to watch, the chances of, you know, when you're relaxed and doing something that you're enjoying, the chances of intimacy is much, much higher. So sometimes even free little things like that, that starts a conversation about what you need day to day outside of the bedroom, which is going to then in turn help in the bedroom. It's such an easy place to start, but it's really, really helpful.
And if you open any conversation with your partner, honey, if you want more sex, please do fill in the blank. They're going to pay attention. They're going to listen, at least for that moment, right? You can keep reminding them, but you will have captivated your audience.
They will
from the get-go.
Up. And it's so interesting that initially that communicating, and if it's about dishes or what those more day-to-day tasks, vacuuming, those are seem to be a little easier to ask for. Where I find the conversation gets difficult and we need to support and educate around it is the communication actually in the bedroom, because there is so much taboo and shame and guilt, and we're not taught the language of how to ask for what we want.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because I agree. I absolutely agree with you on that level. And when I have an opportunity to have a conversation with women, like once we get past the, oh my gosh, if he would just do the dishes or like not just sit in the chair after dinner or help with the kid, like all of that stuff, which I think we've dissected, I think sometimes we also, as women, make ourselves busy with those things because we don't know how to have that other conversation. We don't know how to have that that level of intimacy or ask what we need for, and that can evolve and it can change. Where do you take women? How do you help them open that conversation with their partners?
This was initially when I made the program, Pleasure Principles, that we work women through. The communication was a 1-week module. We've actually had to turn it into two, we've had to double the amount of time spent on it because so many people were getting hung up there. And once we can figure out, you know, what would bring you pleasure, what you desire, how the schedule needs to change, then it's about how do you ask for it? And we are often doing scripting around it and it seems so simple. We start with a yes, no, maybe list. Like, these are the things I like. These are the things that I would maybe try. Because sometimes partners, if there are mismatched libido, sometimes partners are asking you to do something that you don't really want to do to try and shake it up, and it makes both people uncomfortable. So we're sort of ranking, like, these things I would definitely do or enjoy doing. Maybe I would do these under the correct circumstances, and these ones are a hard no for me kind of thing. And even just getting women to explore what those are for them, because when do we just sit around and think about what would make us happy and what we would like to try sexually? And then we're also working on, once we know what these things are, how are you having that conversation with concrete examples? And we're even practicing talking about it, because it's that hard of a conversation to have, even to somebody that you've been married to for 18 years and have two kids with. It's fascinating to me how difficult those conversations are for people to have.
And I suspect one easy gateway too for women is for them to actually ask their partner what they're looking for. Like, when was the last time you as a woman said to your partner, what would be satisfying for you? What's of interest to you? What do you want to explore? Because it opens the gateway. It starts the conversation. And we're really good at deflecting as women. So, you know, make the commitment to yourself that you're going to return back and you're going to honor an articulation of what you want. But you can start by asking your partner what they're interested in exploring.
Definitely. We usually get both parties to do the yes, no, maybe list. to see sort of where's the overlap and what's completely opposite. And it's just a great way to talk about it.
Yeah, I really like that. I'd love your opinion on this. I've heard from a few different people that one of the things they have found works well in their busy state of life is they actually schedule sex. What's your thought on that?
Love it. We call them intimacy dates with the Pleasure Collective, because sometimes sex is such a hot topic or like a tumultuous issue in a relationship that it needs to be off the table completely for a time, just so two people can sort of rediscover that intimacy. So because we live lives where we're overscheduled, we're often overwhelmed, the only way that sex happens or happens frequently, especially for busy people, is if it's scheduled in the calendar. And one of the biggest things that I get told is, well, that's not very spontaneous. But I think that's another myth that we sort of need to unpack, because even when we were first dating somebody and there was the sparks and everything was new and exciting, you probably still shaved your legs beforehand. You probably picked your nice underwear. So you were already premeditating your sexual encounters.
Totally.
Even in the beginning. It felt spontaneous because it was new and exciting, but it was totally premeditated. And by scheduling sex in the calendar or intimacy, and we can talk about what else an intimacy date entails, but by having that scheduled in the calendar and you can start to premeditate, like think about it, you're already increasing libido. It's like thinking about going for dinner at your favorite restaurant and what meal you're going to have.
Right.
You can already start to look forward to it. So once we can get over the fact that it's not spontaneous, which all the people who say that, I always say to them, well, if you know, you're waiting for spontaneity to work, how is that working for you? It doesn't, it's
right.
Not.
Yeah. I know. I feel like that's the dream, right? We have these fantasies that it's just going to spontaneously erupt like a James Bond movie.
Exactly. But wouldn't it be nice if it worked that way? But it doesn't. It doesn't
work.
Yeah,
but maybe
like
the more
Hollywood.
You're having sex, the more spontaneous happens, because hormonally you're like, yeah, I'm ready to go anytime. Like, I remember having this conversation with my husband a few months ago, and I was like, here's what can't happen anymore. I can't have sex before I go to sleep because I'm too tired, and I don't want to have to go through the effort, and I don't want to have to like go through this dance of rejection. And so what I do is I self-sabotage by working really late and then sneaking into bed later because I'm just done. And having had that conversation, being honest, it shifted everything for us because we didn't have this mismatch of expectation any longer. I could go to bed early without feeling like, oh, if I'm in bed at the same time, I'm going to have sex. Like it shifted everything, being able to just articulate that need. So, you know, the reality is we're busy and we're tired, but we don't have to do it like they do it in the movies. We've just never spoken about it. We've never spoken about doing it a different way.
Exactly. And if he could maybe approach you during the afternoon,
right,
on a weekend when you had more time and space, right?
Right.
And you're not exhausted. So it definitely, those are conversations that couples should be having.
And it's okay. It's okay to have them. It's okay to be tired at 10 o'clock at night. That's normal. It's normal. Tell me about these intimacy dates and what those entail and how you put those together. Cause you said we can go into detail on that. I want to understand the details of what goes into one of those.
So I usually have partners take turns and plan them. Or so for your date, you can decide, if you're planning it for the other person or planning it for you. And it sort of depends on kind of what's going on in the relationship at the time, but whatever feels like it would be most helpful. So maybe it is going out for dinner having a glass of wine and just connecting, looking in each other's eyes with phones off for 2 hours. And will say, so what's going to get in the way of making that a pleasurable experience? You might need a babysitter. You might just scheduling the whole thing start to finish so that it's less likely to get interrupted or fail. Maybe you want to send the kids to grandma and grandpa's house for the day and you guys give each other a massage. It literally could be anything, but it's basically, what would you like to happen, or how do you feel you could better connect with your partner? And that could be physical touch. It could be emotionally. It could even just be sometimes time to sit and on the couch and catch up on your favorite show. But you're sort of defining the parameters ahead of time and looking at what are the potential barriers. Because if the kids walk in, that's going to mess it up. So we need to pre-plan all of it, start to finish.
Yeah, set yourself up for success.
Exactly.
Totally. And we don't, there's so many reasons why we don't do that. I'm loving this conversation and I want to make sure that we give people some really practical pieces to take away from. So, you know, I think people are falling into two categories. They're like, okay, great. I get it. I'm tired. I need to have some important conversations so that I can actually start to rekindle this spark. And then I think we probably have other people who are like, listen, like I am tired, but I don't have a spark to rekindle. Like I really don't have that piece. Where do we start with that second group? Like, where do we start? Notwithstanding, you know, vacuum my house and I'll have a libido, but like, where do we start to bring people's libidos back?
What their beliefs are about pleasure and sex. So most times there's hangups where it's, you know, oh, the sex was great when we first met and we were in our early to late 20s, but I'm a mom now. And there's an incongruency there that moms are not sexual or wives are not sexual. And we will hit a barrier that there is some or a few really, really hindering beliefs that are stopping people from having intimacy. And that can take a while to unpack. Like we have, I think it's a 5 or 6 page PDF about it to sort of, what are your beliefs about pleasure? Where are they great? Where are they holding you back? But if I had to say a big stumbling block that we come around to is not being able to be a wife and have good sex. Or not even feeling like you're worthy of that, right? It's, oh, I've got to do soccer practice and lunches and all these things. And sex is just not even something that I deserve.
And then how do we get them? Like, okay, so if we get through that mindset piece and we're still like, I know, but I just don't have the, like, Do you have like a libido smoothie you give people? Like, where do you go to like reignite this piece physiologically? Because sometimes we just need that kick in the pants.
So if, and again, normally this is something that takes minimum 12 weeks of us working on it weekly. But if there was just a simple, what's something that I could start doing today to help improve my libido?
Quick win. Yes.
It would be masturbating, or like we say in the pleasure collective, self pleasure.
I think that's a good place to start.
It's a great place to start. And again, it brings up so many hangups around the shame around it. People don't know how to do it properly, or they've never done it, or, you know, they got caught when they were little and have always felt off about it. They think they're cheating on their partners by doing it. But remember from earlier, sex is not a drive. The more sex you have, the more sex you will want. And that can be solo sex as well. And if you are self-pleasuring properly in a way that feels good to you and you're exploring, we're again increasing those hormone cascades. And sometimes it's just easier and less work to do it for yourself. And then we'll start to get that positive hormone shift. And then you will want more sex with your partner.
When it also, it helps you triage all of the, is this organic? Is this a conversation? Is that like, where's the root cause? It's right. It's a great gateway.
And you're not mad because your husband forgot to pick up the dry cleaning. Like, it's just, yeah, easy.
A quick note from our sponsor, Badass Fuel. 2 years ago, someone asked me what supplements I take to maintain my health, my energy, and my edge. And they were surprised that I only took 4 things consistently. For myself and my patients, there are 4 basics that support, at a foundational level, nearly every system in our body. In my quest for the highest quality ingredients and the easiest system for consistently incorporating supplementation into my routine, I formulated and manufactured my own line of foundational supplements. My intention with this line was first and foremost quality, but equally important was a system for taking and naming the support that ease the incorporation of supplements into your life. Trusted for myself and my patients, under the guidance of your own healthcare provider, I'm excited to invite you to check out our foundational product line, Badass Basics. You can learn more or order the products yourself by visiting www.badassfuel.com.
I love that. I think that is a perfect place to transition this interview. And as you know, at the beginning of the interview, we dissect the topic. And in the second half, what I really want to understand is a little bit more about you. I call these my KPIs, or key performance indicators. So just like we have them in our business, I believe that we have them in how we live our lives as well. So Jordan, I've got 5 rapid fire questions coming your way. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right. Number 1, what is the most impactful book you have ever read? It can be all about sex. It can be like Marie Kondo. Like, what is it, the book that's like really shifted things for you?
It is in my pleasure to read every single day. So I have, hang on. I'm just going to look at my Audible.
I love this. I love this question. I used to ask, what are you reading right now? But now I want to know, like, what is it? What is the book that where you're like, this ignited things for me?
The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks.
Okay. I'm getting such great reading suggestions from this. What is it about that book that was so impactful for you?
Realizing the ways that I was limiting my capacity to feel good in life.
So awesome. What's the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Moving my body. Going to yoga twice a week, at least. Those never, ever come off the calendar.
What's something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I have a pool in my basement.
Yeah, you do.
So I do, and I get my my team, we do like pole dancing, pole fitness. Once a week. And I have a pool in my basement. I don't think I've shared that publicly yet. So,
well, this segues perfectly to question number 4, which is, what do you do for fun or play?
Pole dancing. I live in the Niagara region, and we have a ton of amazing, amazing wineries. So lunch with a friend over a glass of wine in the summer is one of my favorite play things to do.
Yeah, it's amazing. Sometimes it's the simple pleasures, right? And finally, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Born this way.
Oh, yeah. She knew that. Baby, I was born this way. Dr. Jordan Wiggins, it is a pleasure to have you here today. Where can we send people to learn more about what you're up to?
ThePleasureCollective.com.
Done. We will hook everybody up in our show notes. Thanks so much for being here with me today.
Thank you, Megan. It was so much fun.
Ugh. I love talking about this kind of stuff. I want to move this conversation forward. I want to keep talking about what it means to have pleasure in your life. This is one of those topics that I find we so rarely discuss as women. And I'd like to keep this conversation going over in the Anthropology Collective. I don't want to know what position you are dreaming of for this year, what your sexual habits look like at this current moment. What I actually want to understand is, on a most fundamental level, what needs to be in place in order for you to have pleasure in your life? What do we need to get out of the way? What do we need to clear in order for you to have pleasure on your own terms? I think we all think we are so unique, and it's so busy, and it's so crazy, and how can anyone else be experiencing this? But I believe that there is commonality here, and I would love for us to come together to find some solutions so that we can all move a little bit closer to pleasure in 2020. If you enjoyed today's episode, I'd love to hear from you over on Apple Podcasts. Share with us a review, how you feel about the Anthropology Podcast. And until next week, go build something amazing. We'll see you again next Tuesday.